final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon and Kapla.
And this week we're here to talk about the latest episode of Lower Decks, A Farewell to Farms. And, well, it did lead us to the TNG episode, Sins of the Father, but we're also covering that for a much more somber reason, which is our Trek news this week, which was the passing of frequent Star Trek guest star Tony Todd, who of course played Kern in the episode we're going to look at, among others, across TNG and DS9. He also played various different aliens and memorably played the older Jake Sisko in The Visitor from Deep Space Nine. So his contributions to Star Trek are numerous and memorable, but he's probably best known for his horror roles, most iconically the title role in Candyman, which was a great film.
Can I just, I'm going to weigh in on Candyman before we get into everything else he did, because I looked
at it. I can't say it now that you said it, because then it'd be three times.
No, it's one each though. I think that's louder. And there's no.
On the same screen might count.
I was going to say, and the lens could be a mirror, like the.
It's five. It's five anyway that. It's three for Bloody Mary. So
let's save some just in case we accidentally say it.
Yeah.
So the film of which we are speaking, it's quite funny because. It's got over, like, I think it was like 250, something like that, roles on IMDb. So that's just how prolific he was. But Candyman, I was just, funny enough, listening to, there's a podcast which got released starting on Halloween about a true story, which, even though it's not, like, if you see Candyman in the credits, it says based on a short story.
Oh. Actually,
based on a short story, that thing. But there's actually a real life story of someone who came through a bathroom cabinet to kill this woman. And basically the writer, they interview the writer, he took loads of stuff, and he goes like, oh well, yeah, but you just take stuff from real life and you make it into fiction. Yes, that's what based on true story is, you prick. He was a bit of a dick, basically. Lovely film, but one thing which is nice is, like, the last one which they did, which Tony Todd was in a more minor role, it's kind of nice because they said it, because the woman who got killed was black, and they kind of took that away from the story. They named a character after her, but made it white. You know, they took a lot of stuff from black people struggling in America, in Chicago, I think it was, the original case happened.
Well,
and the book
was set in the UK, I think. But anyway,
well, it was, but that's what I'm saying. It's like he credits
the original stuff
from the original story. So he even named a character. So when he says it's not based on anything from the real story, it's just blatantly not true. But anyway, in the last film, it was kind of written where it was kind of like about poor black people in America, and they even made the when you called for that person whose name I shall not mention again, it was like, it was to protect them, so it put the power back, like, it, you know, it was empowering more than taking away. So the fact that Tony Todd near the end, I'm sure it meant a lot to him, to, like, as much as he was wonderful in that film, it's not his fault anything was taken from someone else's story, but I think it's kind of nice that he got to be involved in something which kind of right at that. Sorry, just if you want to look it up, it's a podcast called the name of the film, the true story of the bathroom cabinet killer or something like that. But it's fascinating. And if you're a fan of the films, I'm glad I heard that true story, which kind of that film owes so much to.
Yeah, I've never heard that. I mean, it was based on a Clive Barker short story, but I didn't realize he'd taken so much inspiration from something that was true. So yeah, I don't think
the original story had. I think it was the filmmaker who borrowed so many things from the actual case. So I don't mention in the original short story. So that's what I'm saying. He took all the stuff. took all credit away from this person, just credited the short story, which was just a heinous act. And then he even says, it's like, oh yeah, but like any attention on this is good. It's like, well, you just said it wasn't based on it. So don't, you can't have it both ways, you prick.
Anyway, yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't that much attention. I've seen that film several times. And that's the first time I've heard it. So
yeah,
anyway, there we go.
And a quick shout out to his Babylon 5 character, who's just really sweet. And a lot of his thing inside of him, and he kind of has this wonderful monologue, because he all through this appearance says about he's doing it and he's fighting this, like there's a kind of civil war basically in it, and he's saying he's doing it all for his little girl at home. And at the end he records this log entry where it's like, sweetie, I did it, I protect you, I kept the monsters at bay, just as he's about to sacrifice himself. And it's just so sweet. So that's my little shout out. Sorry, over to you guys.
Yeah, it was a fantastic actor. Yeah. Lots of, as you've covered there, a lot of, even just in his Trek roles, a huge range, even though it's probably best known for horror. But he was a very versatile actor. And
he's been in a lot of sci-fi as well. He's known.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
But I think horror and sci-fi cross over a lot anyway, don't they?
Yeah.
They do tend to, yeah.
Just through Doug Jones alone, he's in most of them.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking there was a good guest role in the X-Files episode Sleepless, which was very good as well. So yes, we take our hats off to Tony Todd.
Last little mention also, just fair play to the Candyman people as well, because prior to that he'd done a few he'd worked a bit.
That was five.
Fuck it. Anyway, there we go. That's me toast. Prior to that, he'd done a few roles. So it's like, it wasn't his first role. And before that, he was doing a lot of army parts. So it's interesting to think, if it wasn't for Candyman, the people who made that film, I've already said, so I may as well enjoy it now. People who made that film, he might not have gone down the horror sci-fi route. So it's quite possible they're responsible for the career he had. So. Just interesting.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, it was a hugely iconic role and a very good film that stands up very well. The sequels, not so much, but there we go. That often happens.
I think that's
said
pretty much the entire horror genre, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And no one's bemoaning that there was never a follow-up to Farewell to the Flesh made or whatever.
First one skipped straight to the 21 reboot. One was quite good. Like, just skip the ones in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. Anyway.
Well, there's a typical thing, isn't there? There's like, your first one, that's great. Your second one, you excuse for why they can't die. Your third one, doing the second one again. Your fourth one, a completely different story, not related whatsoever. You think one in space or on the moon?
Yeah. That's
and
true.
And then they let it rest for years. And a lot of times, the ones when they let it rest for years, it can be, it's hit and miss. It's half the time it's given up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it sucks still.
At least with Candyman, we never got to the moon. That's
quite disappointing.
So. On to Lower Decks then. So A Farewell to Farms was this week's episode. And it starts with Klingons farming, which I loved, because we've talked about this a few times, like how there must be Klingons who do other jobs other than being warriors.
Yeah, the cattle. Like, I think, like, we only see the warriors because we're looking at it from in the space with the Federation sort of the people, the meat. Which makes sense. It's like, if you're watching a war movie, you tend to just see soldiers. But
exactly,
we know there's loads
yeah.
of other people. Like, if it's the British, like, if it was Second World War, you might see the British Army, and then you might see German or French families and stuff doing stuff, but you wouldn't see anybody back home in England. You'd think, oh, all the English are just soldiers.
And also, I thought it was really interesting, because you hear about Klingons which get demoted, and you see them later regain their power, but you don't usually see what happens in between times. So seeing them on a farm, which I think would be seen as a honourable job, like you're feeding the warriors, you know, you're doing a lot of hard work. I think that would be a very laudable thing to be as a Klingon. However, these are people who are warriors, not farmers, so like you get to have fun with them, not really know what to do with the farm, but they're doing their darndest, you know.
Yeah, I thought that was a great conceit to lean into.
Yeah,
and it is one of them things that are often debated in Star Trek fandom. So a really nice touch for them to actually touch on that. And then you get the impression this episode's one that maybe they've taken a bit more care over, or maybe they're more interested in just because we get the title card over the actual action, which immediately sets it apart from anything else. It makes it feel like, this is different.
It's how it's doing Picard at the beginning, but on Kronos.
And with the low
But when you think about it, you've got this captain who's gone to a farming on Kronos, and then it's taking piss out of Picard because you've got Captain Picard, as we all have last seen him on TV, has gone to go live on a farm. And Picard's making wine, they're making blood wine. The comparisons are brilliant.
Oh, yeah. And I think there's also a nod to the other episode. So it's kind of a genre within Lower Decks of having the episode, which is apart from the main story. So you had Peanut Hamper and one, and they've done a few of them. And I think they did the same style of like the credits over the action. And you got, I like when they do a different riff on the theme tune. So it feels like a movie when they do the Lower Decks, where it's like, like it's
when you think about it. Compared to live action, you've got 42 minutes, two minutes at the start are you going to be a title sequence, 2 minutes at the end are going to be a credit, so you've got 38 minutes. And that's not flexible. You're making 38 minutes of TV every week. But with an animation, I think it's a bit easier to sort of do a different title. You just go to some, you're just trying to do an extra... this week.
And also with it being on streaming and things like that, there is more freedom for stuff like that. It used to be very regulated by like the Screen Actors Guild and things like that, and you had to include certain things. And
I think
the rules are a bit more flexible than they once were.
I think with the animation have all stuck very closely to being a fixed length.
But we've seen
with live action, like how short was that was it a season two Discovery?
It was 30 odd, but it was about 32 minutes or something like that. It was
massively
noticeable
that it was a short episode.
Yeah.
And also, I'll also say it's like, sort of to what you were saying, Elliot, it's like where you've got a certain amount of time to tell the story. In this case, it's like 25 minutes, I think, Lower Decks usually comes in around.
Yeah.
A bit longer than the standard TV ones, but not that much. So if you have only got a certain amount of time to play with and this is a standalone story you've got to tell, a few minutes for the credits added to the story time makes a huge difference. So I think it shows here. They needed that time, you know, for the story.
It's quite amazing that they're already, in a way, taking the mick out of modern Trek because they've gone straight into Picard. Let's rip on that.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. This is the Klingon character that we met before in that episode where we got T'Lyn from. And they had the various different crews. So we have met this character before. And Mariner keeps calling him. We find out that he's got demoted, and because of that, the whole family has shared in the dishonor. And Mariner and Boimler turn up.
Just really related to the bit. Is it before that when the woman's kind of trying to chat him up and sort of saying, like, oh, well, I don't mind someone on their road back to being captain. And then his brother comes in. It's like, we've all had that moment when your buddy, you're getting well with a girl and your buddy comes over and totally fucks it up for you. It's like, that was just so relatable to me.
he does, doesn't he? Boimler and Mariner turn up, and Boimler's now got a mustache. So this is, an ongoing thing now.
Well, he's obviously doing more, isn't he? he's doing more member.
And
I just wonder if they were aware of when they've got sort of the release dates. if it has been done deliberately for Movember.
Yeah,
I will give them like if they can prove they do, I will send them over a shiny £5 note. You know, if I mean, I would be impressed. I'm not saying they didn't. I'm just if he shaves it, amazing forward planning.
If he shaves it off for episode 7, we know he has.
Yeah. Then okay, no, if he shaves it off in episode 7, £5 to I'm doing fundraiser for ADHD UK, so I'll send it there. There you go.
There we go then. But who knows? But I mean, it's obviously part of the storyline that he's trying to look like the other successful Boimler that we saw. No, so there is a storyline reason for it.
And he's got the facial hair is obviously an excuse for him to do stuff he could already do. But it's just really nice to... It's nice to have different plots with Boimler, which do feel in keeping. Like, you know, he would be fascinated by Klingons, but he would always be too afraid to maybe do what he does here. So it's really nice. It's great character development for their last season.
Yeah, definitely. It does feel like they've always sort of skirted around Boimler becoming more useful, for want of a better term. But yeah, it feels like they're really going in on that now, possibly because they did know it was the last season, and so the character arcs need to get accelerated a little bit. Yeah. And you know, we need to stop waiting around for getting them to wherever the final state is. Like, we've got a limited number of episodes to tell it now. The B plot then is all about the bird doctor and the food critics.
Yeah, it's a comedy
I thought it was okay.
It was okay. It was funny. And if it hadn't led us, if we hadn't done like some of Riker's cooking previously, that is obviously shit when you watch it. It could have very easily led us down that path as another episode too.
It could actually. That did cross my mind. Yeah. Do we need to talk about Riker's omelette? But we have already covered that at length.
Yeah.
I just felt it's... I mean, it's a fine comedy plotline, but it's just, for me, it went on a little bit. It wasn't a lot to hang a B-plot on.
It was very strange because we've obviously got to have something major is coming with the plot arc that they're putting in.
Yeah.
But there was nothing in the B-plot to drive that forward, which is really strange.
No, there wasn't, actually. Yeah, they could have had...
That would help. That would help for me.
You know, we used to have it... You used to get episodes like this quite regular with TNG, etc., where you would have a good main plot, and then it'd be a stupid side story that meant nothing. That was a bit,
and it just had nothing.
Why are these two gone together? They don't gel together as plots. They're very adjacent. No.
And I'll add that for a character which we don't usually see a lot, I'm quite happy. Like, it's great to give him some airtime before the end of the series. Great, but it didn't really relate back to a lot of stuff we already knew about him, so it felt a bit alien in that way as well. So it's like, I don't know. It felt like in this stage of his journey, it would be better to call back on stuff we already knew about him as opposed to introducing new stuff for a plot to his character.
Yeah, it was kind of, we're going to define this species now as they're all about food, and that sort of came out of nowhere, really. Yeah.
It's sort of like the entire species are hipsters.
Yes.
Yeah, and we're opening up that door within the last series.
One of them did have a good line, though, where she said, like, "Oh, catch me as I performatively faint." Yeah. I thought that was good fun.
I mean, there's to take nothing away from, there were some really funny writing, some funny moments, but it just didn't feel like a plot.
It didn't gel with the main plot, I think, is the problem.
Yeah, and it's the main plot was like a movie, so we don't want to...
I don't think there's anything wrong with what they were doing there. I don't think there's anything wrong with the character development. I thought it was funny. But it didn't drive our main story forward, and it didn't go with what was happening in the main plot of the episode. It was almost like, what are we going to do with the rest of our characters this week?
Yeah, it felt very much like that.
It was almost like one of them where, oh, we've got to have a reason to show Captain Freeman for her rights, and we've got to show Tandy, and we've got to show Rutherford, and we've got to, as opposed to, no, they've got a reason to be there. It was very much one of them where you used to have the actress has a stupid appearance in them for no reason.
Yeah.
Sorry. Agreed. And I think I'd want this in the first couple of series when I'm getting to know that character. I would love to have found this out. Then you could have had some fun callbacks over the last few series.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. it just seems a bit late in the day.
Yeah. I mean, for what it was fine. But it didn't add anything really. We could have lived without it. But yeah. So back with the Klingons then. I love how they really get into all the Klingon like minutiae and all the rituals and things like that. Like Boimler tells them about, well, there is this ritual that can get you your status back. And it's, oh, that's going to have to go to the Klingon Oversight Committee. And having these very sort of mundane things, but putting them into a Klingon context is just inherently funny. You don't really need to do anything with that.
Also, I think you're calling out something which is sort of there, which very well observed, that there is these kind of bureaucracy and there's always a right for any occasion within the Klingon. So I thought it was really well observed about, you know, this is classic what Lower Decks does really well, of spotting something you might not have even noticed yourself, but then it's like, oh, of course, yeah, they do have one. Yeah, you're right. It is ridiculously bureaucratic for a warrior race. Yeah, that's really good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll see a bit of that when we go back to Sins of the Father.
And it's all ancient rituals. It's obviously like from the time of Kaelas, everything was written down what you can do. And some of these have fallen out of fashion, but they've never overwritten the law and gone, no, we don't have that anymore. It's just to stop doing it. Like, it's obviously like there's some of it. Well, I was just saying, some of these that they said they haven't been used for 300 years, and it's like, oh, where a captain could challenge to get moved to different ships and all that. And maybe there was a point where they're really struggling for the armies to function because they had captains moving all over the place and killing each other all the time.
Yeah.
So it's probably got out of fashion for that reason. It's caused the major problem in the past, so it's like, yeah, let's not do this anymore.
I mean, there's even like precedent for the real world where like you get laws overturned, then old laws which were like hundreds of years old suddenly come. I don't want to get into it, but in America that's kind of happening, and it's happened over here before, and it's kind of weird that it really happens as well.
We get weird things.
Yeah, I was going to say.
More than most countries, because we don't have a constitution. We just have laws made over the centuries, hundreds and hundreds, even going back a thousand years. And a lot of these laws have never been rescinded. They've just been sort of built on or replaced. So the old laws are still there, if you assume.
Yeah,
I mean, we have that.
Brexit's a good example because at that stage, loads of laws were going to go off the books. We signed some over so that we could do them in time. But if they had, they were quoting laws from hundreds of years ago, which would suddenly be the law of the land. They're going, let's not do this, maybe. And
Well, we had the famous one. I can't remember which county it was, but one of the English counties was technically still at war with Germany until...
It was Berwick-on-Tweed at war with Russia.
Berwick-on-Tweed, that's it. Yes, that's
Berwick-on-Tweed. How did you know? How did you know to keep that around?
they were at war for like 100 years, because when... Was it the Crimean War?
It was something like that. When the war was declared... They weren't part of the Union, and so it was Great Britain and Berwick-upon-Tweed.
No, because they kept moving between England and Scotland, so it was declared as England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, and Berwick-on-Tweed for declaring war. But then when they sort of wrote the peace treaty, they just went England, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland, and forgot to include Berwick-on-Tweed, so officially Berwick had still been at war.
All I'm saying it seems like Berwick were ahead of their time of keeping out of that treaty. They might have had a point.
Yeah. So a good example of this is when they talk about the right of unending pain. And one of the Klingons has a great sort of one-liner. They say, yes, I know about Kalus's Thorn murders. Just this lovely just flavour to it all. It's really good fun. And they do go through this gauntlet of pain, and the way they get round it's very Star Trek, like we'll distribute the electricity between all of us rather
than... But these basics are something we've seen lots of times.
Yes, they are.
And it seems it's very clear one as well, because it's very Starfleet to have, because we're all going together, we'll distribute the energy and everyone will live. That's very Starfleet, very scientific. But it's very Klingon to, if we work together as a unit, in war, we will survive this. And that's actually a Klingon message, I think.
Yeah, I've not thought of it that way, but yes. I've got a few other notes on the B plot, but we can kind of cover that in one go. I will mention it, because, again, I do think there's some really good witty lines in both sides of the story. But, yeah, where they're talking about what the punishment's going to be for making the bland meal, and it says, your whole family will be removed from the great seating chart.
That was nice, yep.
We invited Warp Drive so we could go forward and find strange new worlds and strange new meals.
Yeah.
I found a stew or two. You know, he's got a lovely line.
Yeah.
I found a stew, some good stuff in it. Freeman reacting to them and basically let me at them, being protective of them.
Yeah.
And I do how Tandy turns out to be a really, really good in the kitchen, because she can use her assassin skills with a knife.
Yes. I suppose if we're being really charitable, and this is being very charitable, we could say that thematically it kind of reflects the Klingon story in that it's showing what different bureaucracies in different cultures can be based on.
That's very tenuous.
I said I was being charitable, and that was much a stretch, but there you go. At least there's some thematic link. I mean, some of the TNG B plots, there was nothing. But anyway, back to the main story then. They have to fight a giant Targ. And there's a good joke about, wait a minute, do we express its anal glands? Which I thought
You just want a pet setter, don't you?
Yeah, it's there. You have to trim its claws and clean its anal glands. This is your pet Targ, isn't it? And you want a pet setter.
Yeah, you want a pet sitter and groomer or something. Yeah, it's lovely. And he goes, so what? I get to do this.
Well, he got called out for that by the rest of the board. No,
he did. And that I think that speaks to a lot of kind of situations in the real world of when someone sets themselves up as the leader of everything, and they just think that everyone else is just going to follow them blindly, but everyone else is just sick and tired of them as well. It just takes someone to call them out. And it's well observed from the real world as well as within sort of Star Trek lore.
Yeah. And so that basically that comes to a head with the main Klingon guy. It's not that he doesn't want to be a captain, but he didn't enjoy being a captain on the fleets that he was put in. And Boimler brings in this rite of forced conscription, and that makes the guy who's forcing it all on them part of their crew, so they can execute him instead of one of the crew.
And it's worth saying Boimler does show down with the Klingon we're following in this story. So it's a nice moment for Boimler to have that kind of, it's the classic kind of thing of the human standing up to the Klingon, saying something to rile them up, to make them see sense.
He's using his knowledge of Klingons and knowledge of all the rituals and everything. I suppose it brings to mind a little bit.
I was going to say,
there was that DS9 episode. Go on. Yes.
I'm just going to,
there was the DS9 episode, The House of Quark, where Quark sort of baffles all the Klingons by going through the finances and everything.
Yeah.
There's maybe a little bit of an element of that in here. The Klingons do have all these rituals, but they don't really like to think about how they all interact with each other. And if you do that right and mix it with this right, that'll let you do that. And
and we can make so much more profit.
So, yeah. And it turns out that Mariner, it wasn't solely to help him get his captaincy back. The reason she was doing that is because she needs a captain's permission so they can run sensor scans, and that ties us into the dimensional rift.
And he was blocking it, so she was happy to help getting killed.
And also, there was I just love this, just a lovely little moment where he talks about the ship which they're going to use and how it's kind of all beaten up. And he goes, "Well, this was one which Martok used to win back his."
Yeah.
Nice, lovely. Who doesn't love Martok being mentioned for a start?
Exactly. It's just
a nice way of doing it. I love the plucky underdog. It kind of calls to mind Descartes as well, with his kind of ship he had to take on.
Well, it's sort of like this, where we do know that Martok had to fight for his honor back at one point.
Yeah.
Kronos. So was he farming when he turns around and goes, "Yeah, Martok, when he started regaining his honor, he started in a ship like this."
Yeah,
possibly so. Yeah, and the B plot wraps up. Basically, they serve them shit to see if they know it's shit, and they don't know it's shit.
And no, that's because of who they've been served. Because of who they've been served by, they're going, "Oh, this is brilliant. Yeah. This is lovely."
And
he's
I think,
chef of the mind, indeed.
And to be fair, this actually
is very much like hipsters. Who go places because it's fashionable. They haven't actually got a clue what they're having a lot of the time. And if they're somewhere fashionable, it's amazing. And look at this and how it looks. And yeah, this is wonderful. And then they'll slag off somewhere else. And just because it's not the fashionable place, they'll slag it off. Yet the two are probably the other way around of which has the really good food and what tastes nice. And
quite possibly, yeah. And I think the disdain for the B-plot is pretty much made canon, because you have Boimler's reading a report and he goes, "Oh, so-and-so gave us a bad food review," and Mariner goes, "What? No, I don't care." And he's almost like acknowledging, this B-plot's got nothing to do with anything.
I didn't even think of that.
We do have the big reveal right at the end of the episode. After Mariner has gone to Boimler, I've gone to check out on the anomaly to scan it, and she comes back, "Well, we thought they were natural," and shows data pad and goes, "Oh, no, but they're not. These are being made artificially."
Could we please have a piss take of Discovery in that? That would be so nice if later on they saw, because there was that thing of the man-made thing on their worst series 4, was it?
Was it series 4? The anomaly, the DMA or whatever it was.
I've tried to forget about season 4.
No, I want a piss take of it in there, though, because they take the piss out of it.
I wouldn't mind that,
As we've had a bit of a big reveal on the main plot this episode, because I think we'd already got it right at the start that it's going to be about anomalies.
Yeah.
Do you want to make a prediction yet, Squee, of who's behind it?
Ooh.
And do you, Jim, want to change who you think's behind it?
Have I not said
anything? No.
Right.
I'm sticking with Folians.
I did say no. I said Big Hand. I want Big Hand.
You said Big Green Hand.
I will add to my Apollo riff that this is additional, not instead. Apollo is also a member of the Q Continuum, so you get Q in there as well. Because they've done that with Trelane, so why not with him?
Yeah, well, see, Apollo, we got them in the New Frontier books. I'd prefer it to be Apollo, and they bring in the characters from New Frontier, because I just want a canon version of the New Frontier books. That's all I want. With the amount of Star Trek we get, just do a one-off film, do a Captain Calhoun film. Anyway, I will stop beating
that
drum.
I hope that's the case.
I hope it is. But no, I'm going to stick with our old friends. whose name has just escaped me. What are they?
Iconians.
The Iconians, that's it. I'm sticking with that for now. But the thing with what they did last season, where it turned out to be Nick Locarno, it literally could be anything. It could be that cat out of Cat's Paw that was actually a witch or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Wesley Crusher hasn't come up in this one. Wesley Crusher's been in, he's been doing the rounds, so...
Yeah, no, he was in a flashback when they did the flashback to Nick Locarno. So Wesley's had his...
Good point.
Can't appear again, but he has had his Lower Decks moment. I'll stick with my bets at the moment, but we can always update it as we go along.
I am, with no evidence apart from the title screen, I am sticking with it being Folians.
Yeah. So, back to TNG then, with Sins of the Father, which is the first of this type of Klingon story, where we go to the Klingon homeworld. We'll get to what the Klingon homeworld's called in this episode. First of sort of a series of Worf politics episodes.
Yeah, this does start off a lot of storylines. Sorry, Elliot, after you.
I was about to say, before we get into it, I'm not sure if this is Geordi who's late with our comments about Quark and Klingon bureaucracy, or if she thinks that it might be Quark's space accountant behind the anomalies.
Ooh. I mean, that'd be hilarious. That'd be hilarious. Like, just so random.
That would be good.
And
to be fair,
that's out there enough. Rose is wishing us all sorts of great stuff.
Oh, great.
Full moon, super moon.
Leonard, meteor shower party. Tomorrow have the greatest, most wonderful Beaver full moon, super moon on Friday. Wow.
I didn't know we were having one of them, but it sounds great.
Also, it's a meteor shower party tomorrow, and then it's the Beaver full moon, super moon. Yeah, wow. Great. I didn't notice the moon was very bright tonight, but that would make sense.
I'm going to look that up and find out what it means.
Can I give just a shout on this episode? One thing, it's a kind of more general note. One thing which I never kind of noticed until this episode, because I think it's been a while since I watched these Next Generation Klingon episodes, and in Deep Space Nine and Beyond, it kind of evolves to something else again. But I never noticed how much these Klingons in their style and their delivery and everything remind me of the fact that in the original series, you had kind of a lot of old Shakespearean actors playing.
Yeah.
And you it's still in there in these episodes. There's a lot of kind of big speeches where they're going, and I will kill you when I start, where you stand, without doing any threatening gestures.
Yeah.
Would this be around the time, though, also when Star Trek VI came out?
I mean, probably not too far.
A little bit before, but we did have it was maybe being made, and maybe some of them had seen bits being made, but we had Christopher Plummer, obviously, didn't we, with his hearing it in its original Klingon. And
I mean, it did make me think, I wonder if Star Trek The Undiscovered Country was sort of a nod to that, the fact that it was always played by a lot of theater actors who were done with Shakespeare.
Without a shadow of a doubt, I think.
Oh, it's just something I've never really considered before, but just, yeah, it's, as I say, I didn't remember them being this theatrical and this little fighting in the Klingon episode, but I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was
what you have to remember with this one is this is very, very early Klingon, really. This is one of Ronald D. Moore's first episodes, and he became the Klingon guy in TNG and carried that over to DS9. So when you look at it, like prior to this, we've had the episode that they reference where Riker goes on the Klingon ship. Early second season.
Yeah.
And it's one of the few good episodes in the second season. And we had Heart of Glory in season one, where Worf had to fight like the the other Klingon guys, and we had the emissary with Kayla. But I think that's about it in terms of Klingon episodes that we've had. And other than that, you've had Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 5. And that's yeah. it. You know, when you look at how well developed the Klingons are now.
Yeah.
This is very, very, very early days.
I think having Worf on the Enterprise right through TNG, we've been getting him being very stoic and all that. And it's almost, it makes you wonder if in this episode, the early parts, a lot of the actors who are coming in are trying to play a bit like Worf and be very serious.
I mean, Michael Dorn is your go-to on how to play a Klingon, and Worf himself becomes a far more interesting character as we go along. And these episodes are a great part of that. When we, like the whole Jurass Klingon Civil War arc, with Worf is one of the best recurring elements of TNG, I think.
Well, this way, like, when you think about it, this could have been a great episode, but anything that happens could have been throwaway with Worf being dishonored from the Klingon Empire, and then he just goes back to Starfleet, and he'll still be exactly the same next week. There will be no difference. How he is, and it could have very easily been that, and yet the play on this story right through till the end of DS9, it becomes such a pivotal part of the main story. We know how Ronald D. Moore became known as the Klingon guy. I wonder if he had an inkling of this story arc.
Perhaps,
how monumental it was going to be.
My two notes are, one, like, this also leads to Lazen Bator, who end up blowing up the Enterprise D, lest we forget. They were a huge part, like, they go into Deep Space Nine. They were the ones who originated the very boob window to which Mariner refers in the last episode. It's like, who crawled into her boob window and died? For that line, by the way.
Yeah.
And also, I just I love the general in this one, who's kind of like the judge in the case, and he I remembered his kind of impassioned bit near the end, but I didn't remember. And I love this note about him that he was the judge who was just too old for this shit. He just could not be asked, like, oh, for fuck's sake, I'm trying to retire here. Can we just find him guilty and go home? Like, he seemed so tired throughout the whole thing, and then when he actually had a challenge in front of him, it's like it woke him up. It was just really nice the way he played it.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's you never get a Klingon who's disinterested like he is.
No,
and that
true.
Was such a different shade of Klingon, which was really nice.
Do you mean Kempek? He's the head of the High Council. He's the Chancellor.
But he did look. He just sounded so old and tired and bored of this.
Yeah, he'd had enough.
Yeah. Great.
And obviously we revisit him in season 4. I mean, you know, I refer to it as a story arc, but we didn't do story arcs back in the TNG days. What we did was, if we liked a recurring story element or a guest character,
they made it back once
a season. Yeah. And that is kind of what they do. Like, we come back to this with season 4, they do Reunion, where Kayla comes back, and they also tie in Kempek, and that's where we get Gowron and Juras. And then they decided, oh, we like this Klingon stuff. Let's make that the end of season cliffhanger, and we got Redemption. Over the course of TNG and DS9, I lose track of whether Worf's got his honour at any given point, whether he's in with the council, out with the council, friends with Gowron, not friends with Gowron. It gets very complicated.
I want to say on that, Worf never loses his honour. Worf
is
always honourable, but he may not be recognised by the Klingon council.
I think that's fair, yes. You're right.
I mean, like, just to sort of summarize what we've been talking about, it's like I don't think there's many episodes which make such a fundamental difference to not only where the race goes, but characters with it. So like, yeah, as I say, this Juras, it leads to Garon, it leads to eventually to Martok, it leads to none of this stuff is possible without this episode. His brother, which kind of just, you know, goes back and forth a few times, Tony Todd, which of course the reason why one of the reasons we're doing this episode, it's just so much starts here. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a huge pivotal episode. And it starts in a fairly inauspicious way. I actually really admire the structure of this episode. It wrong foots you.
This you goes know, off at a right off, angle.
Yeah, it starts off, oh, we've got a Klingon coming to be the first officer because Riker did that last year.
Yeah, it seems like it's a sequel to that. Yeah.
And it starts almost like a fish out of water thing with, oh, what's Kern going to be like as the commander? And we get him antagonizing a few of the other officers. And yeah, it basically, he's giving everyone shit except Worf.
It tells you exactly what you think the episode's going to be in the first 5 minutes. Yeah. Brilliant bait and switch. And they didn't do that much back then.
No. You think you literally get... I can't remember the name of the episode where Riker goes off to be on the Klingon ship.
A Matter of Honor, I think.
But you almost think that this is going to be a mirror of that episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that'd be okay. We wouldn't object to that. It would be far less interesting than what we've got.
It would have been, but that is what you think you're watching.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the X-Files had its mythology arc. And usually you knew it was a mythology arc because it was a big two-part episode in the middle of the season. And right from the off, it was aliens. But there was one or two episodes where it'd start and it'd look like it was an investigation into a weird cult. And then halfway through the episode, it'd pivot and it'd be, oh no, that's all because of the conspiracy and it's actually aliens. And you'd go, oh shit, that was a mythology episode. I didn't even know. And it's kind of like that with this. It's like, oh, it's going to be a exchange student episode and it's probably going to be good fun. We're going to find out stuff about the Klingons. It becomes this huge episode.
And you also have it's a lovely little kind of play that he's harsh on everyone apart from Worf, which he treats gently to Raz. Like, that's the ultimate clear on diss, is to treat everyone else severely and treat you really nicely.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And I just thought, if you had gone down the episode it looked like it was going to be, that would be really interesting to play. And, Klingon because he's on a ship. That alone gives you quite a lot of meat.
Well, that's it.
That could have been an episode itself. The whole, where he says to him, he's, when he does a scan or something, he's like, very good, Commander, you did that very well.
Very well. How many meteorites are in the shower? Or asteroids?
Yeah.
2,000. Well done. Are they any danger? No, they're very small. So no cost correction needed? No, sir. Okay, well done.
The bit with him and Riker is just so like it's
yes, when that's you see great. It,
this is kind of Riker's MO really, because like as we've discussed a lot of times before, when he goes against Shelby, when he goes against Jellicoe, like all these times, he's the one who kind of is the voice of the crew to these people.
Yeah,
and here he does it again, and like it's just great because in all the other episodes, yeah, you might have like, oh, well, this guy was right on this, he was right on that, whatever. But it's just like Kern straight next scene, he's in like having dinner with us and goes like, do you know what? Interesting enough, I almost killed Commander Riker. Let me tell you the story. As if he's telling an anecdote over dinner. It's lovely.
I
had to stop myself from killing Commander Riker.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I never do it over dinner.
No, I like it because it's there because I'm on a Federation ship. I didn't kill him. If I'd been on the Klingon ship, he'd be dead now.
Brilliant. And the whole dinner
scene. Yeah, it's really good fun. Like, and like I said, that could have been a whole episode itself.
I have one problem with the dinner scene. And I have no problem with him going, oh, I will try your burnt dead animal and all. But what got me was the caviar. He should really like the caviar.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, the caviar should have been the thing he enjoyed. And like when Picard said, I've got a couple of cases put away somewhere. Oh, we know who's getting paid far too much as a captain, don't we? No money in the Federation, wink, wink.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what he should have been literally having on his meal. He should have literally gone, oh, tasted it, and literally had handfuls slapped on top of the chicken to make it palatable. Yes,
and then you could have had fun with Picard, like he's eating all my fucking caviar.
You know how much this shit costs. Not that I have money.
Actually, if you'd gone down that route of him eating it all, that would have been interesting. The only thing I did think, because I thought exactly the same, but I did think that's how they react in all the other ones, like the Klingon likes the burnt food, the Klingons like the smelly food. So it is playing, but I think it would have been nice, like you say, if they'd done that. And then because like, hey, I haven't got any more after this, you know.
The thing that got me is like Data does his normal thing and he starts explaining it and he's going, it's the live fish eggs from the so-and-so unscaled this, and Picard stops him. I'm thinking, no, the Klingon's going to love that fucking stuff, out that it's from a live animal.
Yeah, they didn't play enough on those bits. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was kind of nice. I did like the note where he's like going, it's like, what is this? And he goes like, well, I especially make sure there's a couple of, you know, real kind of this isn't replicator. It never does justice. Mm. And it's like when he takes the honor of that, that was very clean.
Yeah. Yes, that was really good.
The subtle note, but it was there.
Yeah.
He got that. Right. You made sure that there's real food and you.
And this is an honor.
You got your way. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, all of this leads to Kearney's Worf's brother, spoilers. And yeah, there's been a challenge to Worf's dad's honor, and they need to go back to the Klingon homeworld. And Picard's like, I will stand with you because Picard's awesome and he stands with his crew.
This was strange as well because Kern admits that he's only come on the Enterprise to do this with Worf, that he's not interested in being first officer or the officer exchange program. That was all just a pretense to get to Worf to see if he could act as his brother and would lead the family. And then Worf goes and tells Picard all this, what Kern's just done and why he's really there and can we go to Kronos to sort this out?
Yeah.
And then Picard comes out and he's fine with Kern still being first officer. Oh, I have no problem with your pretense of being on my ship as first officer. Whatsoever.
In all fairness, he separates. I think this is Picard separating his captaincy from his honor, and doing the right thing by Worf. I do love this scene. After you, mate.
I was just going to say, Kern's obviously gone through the right channels to be the first. So, you know, it's a two for one. You might as well do a bit of exchange while you're there. Yeah.
I just wanted to give, I love this scene because it's like, what I really like about Picard is like when you get Sisko doing these moments of like, oh, of course I'll go and fuck up the Klingons. He's a warrior guy like that. He's an action captain.
Yeah.
What I love about Picard is it's like, he knows the lore of it. He will tell you, he will quote any fact you want about the Klingon Empire because he's studied and he's not short of bravery, but his bravery comes to the fact that he does it, not that, like, if one of the Klingons want to fuck him up, really, let's face it, you know, he probably put in some nifty punches, but at the end of the day, he's not going to win. But he is brave, he is honorable, and when the Klingons see that, they respect it. And it's like, it's about doing the right thing when you don't know you can win. Like, it adds that extra element to me. Like, I'm never going to win, like, a lot of fights and stuff, but like I like to think I would stand up to do the right thing with people. So it's like, it's for me, it's easier to see myself in Picard's actions than it is Sisko's. And it just,
yeah. I like that. I see what you mean. Yeah, I mean, I've got something to say about some of the things Picard does in this episode, but we'll get there. Now, first thing that's weird is when he decides, right, we're going, he goes, set a course for the first city of the Klingon Imperial Empire. Like, yeah. What?
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Like, are you going to land in the actual city? I mean, this is clearly, like, we talk about this when we cover the original series, is that they've not decided on what the terminology was. But it's just odd.
I think it's possibly because it's so ingrained now that the Klingon homeworld is Kronos. But had it actually been named before Star Trek VI?
Maybe not, no. But it's an odd description.
Well, what I was about to say is I wonder, because this would be maybe a year before Star Trek VI came out. So Star Trek VI would be well into production. They probably know at Paramount that the gods be dealing with the Klingon homeworld, etc. There's probably ideas.
Is this season three or four? Which season is this?
This is season three, episode 17.
So 1981.
Star Trek VI came out 1991.
91, I'm sure.
So it's very close to it coming out. So they were maybe told on the TV show, yeah, you can go to the Klingon homeworld, go to the and do this episode, but you can't name it because we are doing stuff in the movie and we haven't decided, and the movie probably took precedent over what the TV script did.
Maybe, yeah. So, I mean,
my hot take is it's like... But,
when you look at the timing, that makes sense that they were told on the TV show you can't name anywhere.
You see, I was going slightly another direction that where we've been talking about the fact they established so much lore going forward for Klingons. Maybe it was just a swing in the miss. They were going, it's like, oh, everyone loved calling it the Klingon Imperial home world. That's what everyone's going to be saying. And it's like, yeah, that's them shit. Like,
yeah, it just rolls off your tongue.
Yeah, they're probably shooting the movie and they go, no, let's reshoot that to be Kronos. That sounds better.
Yeah, well, first of all, it says the first city. So it's like, well, do you have to specify which city you're going to when you're heading to a planet?
Here's another idea that it could be that, The TV show's being made and the movie's being made at the same time. And they've decided on the movie what it's going to be called. And they've put in the notes on the TV show the first city of the Imperial Empire for them to go to the movie to find out what it's called. And somebody has literally done that thing and just gone, oh, that's obviously the lines.
That's happened before.
Yeah. Okay, and so the first city, whatever, like if you pull up in the wrong bit of orbit, do they say, right, you can only go to Skegness? Like, we'll let that one go. But then the Klingon Imperial Empire, that's tautology. Of course it's Imperial if it's an empire, like that's... Anyway, never mind. Anyway, so they get there. Duras, basically, Duras is a baddie. He's a baddie.
He's a weak-willed wanker.
With a name like that, you know we are going to have issues with this family for years to come.
Exactly. And you can tell it's all... And you can tell it's all crooked politics because you've got Kempek going, oh, bugger, Worf's turned up. Don't challenge it, Worf. And
I'm so tired right now.
You said he would not turn up because he's in Starfleet. He fucking turned up, hasn't he? Yeah. He's here in the first city of the Klingon Imperial Empire. I can't believe it. I said we should have held this in Croydon.
Do you know, there's a barrel of blood wine behind the bar for me. I was expecting to be there at 5 o'clock. If I'm there, fucking late because of this shit.
Yeah, bloody Worf, honestly. Anyway, so he has Kern attacked, and that takes Kern out of the running. And then Worf also got... Go on.
Sorry, just skipped over one bit I wanted to mention. First of all, first time we've had Shadich is mentioned in this episode, I believe.
Shadich, yeah.
Yep, it's nice. It gets used a lot.
So, go on.
And it's in that first scene where Picard comes in with him. Not only a lovely moment where he goes like, they go, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, I'm here because I'm his captain. I stand with my men. I give testimony for my officer. And yeah. I love the thing. Again, it's the thing of respect of like, your commanding officer speaking highly of you, that carries huge weight. That's lovely. And there's a bit where Juris basically steps up to him and goes like, I'll have you. And he goes like, I invite you to test that hypothesis. That is the politest, but also toughest way of saying fuck you I've ever heard. There's something about delivering that line so pristinely to someone who's about to clock you. Is it clear, lest us forget? And he's basically talking very posh. It's like, oh, Picard, that's peak Picard right there, that is.
Well, this is it, and it's because Picard knows. It's like they say, like, don't show a dog. You're afraid if a dog's being funny with you, like... Yeah, you've got to. Yeah, you've got to play the Klingons at their own game. Like, if you sound like you're not sure of yourself, they'll know.
And also, I think saying it in his own way, as opposed to in their way, it's almost like that's even more ballsy. If you're using their way of doing it, it's like you're capitulating to their systems. To say it in the way he would say it. And by the way, next time I tell someone to go fuck themselves, I'm going to say it's like, I invite you to test that hypothesis, because it's just, it's so dramatic. But it's like, I'm not going to concede to your system. I'm going to say how I say, I've come here, I've given on to your process, but I'm going to tell you to go fuck yourself in the most Picard way I can. And it's just great.
So Worf goes to Picard and asks him to be the Shadich. And there's a couple of things going on here. So first of all, Picard, he sort of goes, oh, very good idea, Miss Worf. Don't you want someone a bit younger and stronger? Like, oh, don't, you know. It's almost like, oh, don't pick me as the bloody Shadich. I've just seen what happened to the last Shadich.
Did you hear me telling him to go fuck himself? No, I didn't want to go back in there. That was planned as an exit line.
So there's that. And then but Worf goes, oh, no, I don't want anyone younger or stronger. Oh, fuck. But anyway, so, and when Worf says that, Picard says the correct Klingon things. So it's like, right, how up his own ass is Captain Picard that he's like, well, Worf's Shadich has been chinned. Obviously, he's going to ask me. I better learn what the words are. I think that's a bit, because he's done homework for this. It's like he might ask someone younger and stronger, Picard.
I can imagine someone like Picard, and he's probably not shown it, but having the Klingon officer on his ship, he's probably read books on Klingon culture and stuff,
probably.
So that he knows when Worf comes out. Because he's had Worf go, I've got to do this because of honour and all this, and it's an honourable thing to do. And he's had that really early on from Worf. So he's probably thought, hang about, I'm going to learn all this fucking shit. So he's not pulling the fast one on me.
Maybe,
I'm going to add to that, because I think he's also, one thing we love about Picard, he's a nerdy swat. He reads up on everything. I think last time they forced him to go on holiday, it might have even been as Vash was coming up to him, he was reading an obscure book of Klingon lore because that's what he does on holiday. Like, you know, that this might be just his fun pastime is reading up on Klingon lore, because it's because...
I know, I thinking about it now, I reckon it's a bit of a combination of these things. It's, you know, Worf has come to him before and said, I've got to do this with honour, because of honour. And he's looking through it and he's going, I'm going to check which of this shit he's making up. Like, there is no way your honour says you have to have every Friday afternoon off, Worf. This is absolute bullshit.
And who said you could have prune juice on the bridge? That'll get all over the consoles. Yeah. Is it in the Klingon code, is it?
Yeah, this is bollocks. He reads it all. He reads everybody's thing to make sure they're not scamming him out of...
I do like to think that Picard is the sort of swotty guy who would read up on
I think he would. I think what he's probably done is, because he knows what's going on, what sort of challenge this is, he's done a Boimler and he's like, I need to know everything about this sort of challenge so that I can help my officer the best. I am just joking, but I still think it's a little bit arrogant that he's like, of course it's me. Riker's like, oh, I'm just learning the things if he asked me to be the chadage. Don't be stupid, Will. He's asking me to be the chadage. If anyone's the chadage down here...
You're not even a first officer anymore. Fuck off, Will.
It's even like Picard's going, it's like, oh, are you sure you don't want someone younger, someone fitter? And Worf's like, well, actually, now you may have a point. No, I mean, if you're set on me being it, you know, I will, but yeah. I'm just saying, do you not want something young? No, you've made a really good point. You persuaded me, I'll do it.
I'm going to ask Geordi, what blindy Geordi? He's not going to do you any good. Like, don't miss you. You know you need Picard. And don't even think about asking Data.
Oh, you're gonna ask Troy. Sorry, a woman are you? Oh, whoa, Picard. Sorry, that's not cool, says Worf. just everything is throwing at anyone.
Yeah. Anyway, so yes, they find out some of the evidence could have been altered. And yeah, all of this leads to, and this again, there's so much in this episode. It's like we don't just go and do the next bit of the trial. Picard finds there might be another witness and he has to go find her in the dodgy part of the first city.
I don't know about you two guys, but this is the first time I've watched this back in a while.
Mm. Yeah, it's been a while.
When I was watching it, I was honestly surprised. I thought it was a two-parter. In my memory, because there's so much happens, that it
there
had
is,
to be a two-parter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there is a lot in this episode. Like, it doesn't stop for breath at all.
And I find it again in the interest of adding kind of different shades to how Klingons could be, I found this Klingon woman to be a little bit different. Like her head just even seemed like a little bit different from the usual. Mm. And it's like, as much as I appreciate solidifying the lore around a race, when it is a bit looser, it's kind of interesting what happens. Like all the Klingons seemed so different, which I kind of wish they'd bring back a bit more of that. I think that's kind of interesting, you know? They're the warrior race. So they're all warriors. They're all going to be uniform like this.
Not all pasties are from Cornwall.
There you go.
Yeah, so they find this other survivor. She's called Kaylest. He's like, that's a bit. Like, so you named her after Kaylest. Like, if we have a son, he will be named after the great warrior Kaylest. And what if we have a daughter? I don't know, Kaylest. That sort of sounds a little bit.
Like, to me, that someone in the office who was, oh, fucking hell, I've got to think of a Klingon name. What have we used, Kaylest? Oh, let's have a tea on for a woman's name.
Yeah,
it actually sounds very lazy writing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And then Picard gets attacked as well. So he gets to show that he's all chadiched up. And he does all right. I mean, Kaylest ultimately saves him. But, he doesn't do too bad.
It beats one
Yeah, exactly. Against the Klingon.
It's two against one. They've got weapons, and he beats one of them. Yeah, I think he did pretty well on his own.
No, I'll give Picard that.
And you wanted someone stronger and younger, did you? Shapow, Picard.
Was like, no, you said that, not me. Well, no, we could all tell you wanted someone younger.
Yeah, you wanted someone younger. Well, you ask that guy's face if he wants someone younger.
What about the second guy who says Worf? It's like, fuck off. That guy cheated.
That guy, it doesn't matter. I put the fear of God in him. did a woman have to save you? Shut up. Do you want a chadage or not? Anyway.
The old woman.
So the old lady turns up, and I love how she just gives Kempek loads of shit all the time. She's like, yeah, well, he liked me when I was a bit younger, but he was too fat. And then she's like, you're still too fat.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that we get all the way through, to be fair here, this fits in with everything we see, because as far as we can tell, with Klingon mating rituals, getting up, it's always the women who are in charge. Full stop.
God, yeah. And that's it. She's having none of it. And I do like as well that when she turns up, Kenpec knows that it's over, and Juras is sort of like grasping at straws, and Kenpec's just had enough by that point. He's just like, shut up, Juras, right? Yeah, hey, we need to do something else now.
Fuck off.
Yeah, he's like, look, the jig's up, Juras. We're not doing any more of your shenanigans. That's the end of it.
Your family's dishonourable. Fuck off.
And there's something about this end to this episode, because when I saw this, I think around the same age as Jim, few years older for yourself, Elliot. I just remember being. It'll become relevant. Not that much older, but
Tony wants someone stronger and younger.
Yeah. No, the relevancy is that I remember just being so young, but there's something about the message. It's so clear and so powerful about someone sacrificing their own personal honor for the good of their planet, in this case, you know, their country, whatever they're at. That idea of self-sacrifice, it's told so well that even a child could understand what he's doing.
Yeah.
And like, even if you don't understand all the ramifications, I just think that's really good writing. Whereas Elliot, you were a few years old, so you would have comprehended it a bit better just by those few years, because when you're younger, your understanding builds year by year very quickly.
But yeah, no, I agree with you. And it's Worf all over, isn't it? He always does the most honourable thing, even if it does him harm. It's maybe a little bit harsh on Kern, because Kern has to still keep the pretense. You know, so basically, he denies Kern taking his family name back, because the family name will be dishonoured. But I suppose in doing so, he is protecting him, because if he took the name back, he would get this dishonour. And you know what? This is, it doesn't say it, but this is to be continued. We're not done with the saga of Worf's family honour by a long shot.
Because we find out that something's happened on Kittimer. This is before yesterday's Enterprise or after?
Oh, I want to say after.
I was thinking for
maybe.
Before,
but,
it's the same season, isn't it? Isn't it season?
Same season.
Yeah.
Yesterday's Enterprise. You know what? I've got the list of episodes. I'll find out while we're talking.
Well, can I?
It's just after. It's two episodes after.
Well, this is after yesterday's Enterprise.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
I was just going to throw in as well that it's really nice that until Worf makes that decision, Picard is still fighting. So it's like, well, I don't care about your planet. Like, this is my officer. Like, he's looking after him, whereas Worf then looks after the bigger game. It's nice you get to play both those angles. Like, Picard, of course, will stand up for his man there.
Yeah.
And like Kern all the way through, you mentioned Kern's kind of reaction to this. I love the fact that when Kern's revealed himself to Worf, and they've got that scene, I think it's in 10 forward, where he kind of says about, no, we must do this. And Worf goes like, sorry, you're my first officer here, like, while you're on this ship. But in matters of Klingon, I'm the older brother. Fuck you, you're doing what you're told.
Yeah.
And like, because of the Klingon honor structure, he does what he's told. And like, that carries forward to this moment. So you've already established, because if you just had this moment of him just going, yeah, sure, I'll do whatever, on its own, it would feel kind of weak sauce. Like, it's like, well,
but it's actually built.
It's already established before. That's
You're right.
And again, a lot like Tony Todd to kind of get so high status and then just go, no, I understand. I do what honor demands as part of the Klingon family structure or house structure.
Rose says, think the Klingon planet was named just before the film came out, and that makes sense. Yeah, we'll have to look that up. We'll have to look at when was the first mention of Kronos. We'll look that one up.
Yeah, I still think that was maybe that they got notes from the film, or they were meant to ask the film, so they just put notes in for what it was. And somewhere along the way, it just stuck with what the notes were, and that's why we get the first planet. Oh, sorry, the first city.
The first city of the Klingon Imperial Empire.
Until Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, the homeworld's name had not been established by any sources. The word Kronos first appeared... Oh, in the script of Star Trek VI. I thought it was going to add to
there
the
we go, then.
Yeah, that's why it makes me think that, because this would be filmed at about the same time that was being filmed, or
perhaps, yeah, keep it.
That there's maybe a
keep
lot
it
of
vague.
That keep these things vague, so it's released in this in the
well. In that case, they should have just said the Klingon homeworld instead of the first city of the Klingon Imperial Empire, because that sounds
it would have
stupid.
Made more sense.
Anyway,
I reckon because... someone at some point thought that sounded good. Maybe it was even in Star Trek VI script and they changed it.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah. It was in as a bit of placeholder dialogue until we think of a better name. Anyway, because this is such a packed episode, we get the Klingon ritual where they all turn the backs to him. Either that or they're doing a bit of Wakanda Forever or something. But they all turn the backs and that's it.
Credits come off. You have to join in.
Oh, yeah, that's so heartbreaking. And there's just that little moment's pause, and he looks him straight in the eye when he's doing it. And you know it's breaking his heart. It's fucking so powerful at that moment. Again, this is why a kid can understand it. It's because they make the moment so big, but it doesn't seem unnatural. It's such an acting by everyone, including Tony Todd, the late great.
And no sooner are they out the door of the council chamber as the credits roll, because, quite often TNG would have like a wrap-up scene where you'd have them discussing what's happened or blah, blah, blah. But this episode is absolutely jam-packed, so it's the action's finished, boom, you're done, we're out of here.
That's it, we've run out of time.
See you next week.
Bad. I think that's such an impactful end. It reminds me of...
I think it is.
One of my favorite films is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. So it's Frank Capra and James Stewart, who did It's a Wonderful Life together. This was one of the, I think they might have made three films together, but this was one of the other ones. And right at the end, there's a gunshot fired, and this guy who's trying to set him up politically, where he's like this really innocent guy who just believes in doing what's right. And there's a gunshot, and like the guy comes running out, going, it's like, no, don't arrest that man, arrest me, and the credits just roll. Like, that's it. It's like the end just establishes everything. It establishes who's guilty, and they don't film me for an extra scene in the end, which is needed. And this is that.
No,
it's not needed.
Used to do that though.
End it.
I was off to say, a lot of shows used to have these impactful moments, and then used to have another minute of something lighthearted, just so that it. Oh no, we've got to end our show lighthearted. We're not allowed to end impactful. And it was, I don't know if it was something that was written in cut, TV code in America, that no, you've got to finish on a light-hearted moment, whatever, which you get in TOS, the original series. How often did an episode end with fake laughing on the bridge? Ha, ha, ha!
Yeah.
But admit...
Very true.
But it is. It's just brilliant how it ends. It'd been ruined if it did go to anything else.
And it shows something we all picked up on it without discussing it. You know, we all noticed that. And it's great.
So, and I do think TV has got better. They don't do that shit anymore.
Yeah.
Not always. No, I mean.
But even then,
if
there's
anything,
usually
it's
a scene after the thematic ending. There's usually a scene where they discuss it or something.
I don't know. I think maybe it's gone too far the other way now. It's all about dramatic cuts to black now is TV. Like, you just boom, and that's the end of the episode. Yeah. I think there's a happy... Not every episode needs to end abruptly. Exactly. The nature of the story should dictate what you do. Yeah. And this one does it very, very, very well. And you know what? If we don't get led back to this again, perhaps when we're on a bit of a lull, we should do the rest of the Worf Klingon arc, you know, do reunion, redemption, etc. I think that might be.
First thing I thought when I saw this, I want to see all the other ones in this.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed covering this one.
I'd like to follow this, and like we can, like with how much we did of DS9, when we did the Dominion War, we probably covered some of this.
Yes, possibly.
Because this whole story act runs right till the almost till the end. Yeah, yeah. Really.
So that'll maybe be something that'll be fun to look at.
It'll be the
what we can fill in.
The Sons of Mogok, I think, is
But we'll wrap up for there. We will be back next week to talk about the next.
We did get a few questions as we were going through, so I will. Now we've finished talking about it, because they weren't suitable to cut in during the time.
Okay.
But we will cut back to them now. So,
Rose... Did we go nearly an hour 20? Shit. Sorry, I didn't even realise. Sorry, I was really into this.
I'm sorry, it was a really good...
That's great.
The NG episode was a really good episode.
No complaints, just surprised. No. I just realised the time. Yeah.
Countdown to Christmas Day.
Yep. 6 weeks, is it? Okay.
Right.
Are you ready? Absolutely not.
My answer to this is, look behind me, the empty shelves and the pretty much empty room. I should be moving this weekend, next weekend, so everything is in boxes. But the good thing is I will be unpacking to put Christmas decorations up straight away.
I happen to put my hands on the Christmas decorations today.
22nd
other
of
than
November.
That, no planning. Nothing
That's
done.
Only 8 days till December 1st. Mm. I turn on December the 1st. Lights go on December
Fair
the
enough.
1st.
But yeah, just because I happened to be moving some boxes earlier and I came across the Christmas decorations, so I put them ready to put up. I'm not going to be like, I'll go.
I have bought 90% of the presents I need to buy, and I have wrapping paper, but I have not wrapped yet. So
I think
moderately prepared, I think, is a fair answer to
this
that.
This next one is a really good question, but it came in after we talked about Lower Decks, is why I didn't put it up while we're talking about Sins of the Father.
What anomaly will appear tomorrow in the opening credit? Ooh.
Now, I don't think we'll get a different one. I think the opening credits will be the same as episode one, two, and three. But will we get an anomaly episode? Yes.
We've had a tangent in this one, but it's not main focus, so I think tomorrow's going to be a main focus one.
I think we might...
I think we need to step up the arc now. We're halfway through.
I think halfway through we might get a clue of who's behind it.
Yeah, I think... Tomorrow. Yeah, we need to take the arc. Now that it's very clear it is an arc, I think we need to step that up a little bit.
And we're due an arc-heavy episode. Unless they play it like they did last series, it was mostly... oblique references, most of them weren't like, and then it just went mad in the
last two episodes. Who knows?
But that's my prediction.
This is the thing. Lower Decks is very unpredictable, but yes, I would guess that we'll get
to who's behind it.
Yeah, I think anomalies will feature more heavily next episode. If I had to bet on it, I feel like more of an anomaly heavy episode than we've had.
Oh, they could totally blindside us and have absolutely nothing to do with what the main story is and just have a standalone episode of doing something totally random.
Very possible.
Which, again, wouldn't be out of character for Lower Decks either.
It's a very unpredictable series, and it's always a really nice surprise.
We will be covering it next week, along with whatever rabbit hole we go down as a result of it.
Now, Jody posted this about 10 minutes after we talked about the card getting ready. Is why I didn't put it up at the time.
Right.
Yeah, I think maybe the ones from the time we could
for it.
Just skip like quickly over. So Boy Scouts are always bad.
No, I hate Boy Scouts.
Yeah. Next one.
This is just talking about us getting Christmas stuff up. Halloween straight into Christmas. I have no problem with that.
Sure.
There we go. Elliot does not speak for the Retrek podcast or our official opinions. The opinions expressed are solely that of the contributors.
And for God's sake, Jody, the neighbours won't go past because of your rotting pumpkins. Clear them, woman. Clear them.
So yes, next week, more Lower Decks, whatever episode we end up with, you can get in touch with us in the meantime, retrekpod@gmail.com. And we're all over the various different social medias. We're trying out Threads. We might try out Blue Sky. I've heard that's a thing.
We've come off the first ladies' site.
Yes, we've come off that.
We're no longer on the first ladies' site.
Yeah, we're an ex-member of that site, you might say.
We are. And yeah, Retrack Model Studios, as Elliot has said, though.
What's my back catalogue?
Yeah.
Hopefully in 2-3 weeks, I'll have studio back up and running and we'll get something out. I think the first video might be actually me getting the new room ready.
That'd be cool, yeah. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, me and you, Jim, we're continuing our delve through Twin Peaks. So last video, which is up, which you can enjoy now on youtube.com/DocSquee, is us talking about Firewalk With Me and the missing pieces, which is cut material from Firewalk With Me, because like they filmed an extra hour and a half, a full movie's worth, which got cut from the movie. I think one of our most fun, like it's all been great, but that one was really fun to cover. A really amazing,
it was, yeah,
weird, like... You can tell Lynch was much less encumbered there than he was during the TV show. He was just doing what his pure vision. And next week we start on the return. Probably Monday, I think we're going to record, and it's fucking hell. That's a whole different trip altogether. So please do join us. It's just and watch the return on Paramount Plus. It's well worth it. It's batshit, but it's well worth it.
Yeah. And thanks for trekking with us this time. We will see you next time on the retrek.
What me?
For the glory of the Empire.